Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's all college basketball this week on Underdogs. First, on the men's side, we're looking at the wounded assassins who could find their way through the conference tournaments into the NCAA field and spring upsets. And then on the women's side, we're looking at value picks to win the national title.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog.
Underdog. Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
Then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you. I'm Jordan Brenner, joined as always by my co-host, Peter Keating. Peter, can you feel it?
I'm
feeling the madness.
I'm not only feeling the madness, Jordan, I'm feeling a little feisty. You know why? Because right now is when this stuff crystallizes and we realize that some of the teams we have been following, analyzing, trying to bring to light, trying to hype up because they deserve it, still are allegedly have a lot of work to do or are outside the bubble or on the brink. Like you know, come on. This is the time of year where the people who make these decisions have to recognize the great work put in by some of the teams that ought to make the tournament. And hopefully we'll highlight them today.
So if you're not as familiar with us, and how dare you if that's true, but this is where Peter and I make our bones. We've been projecting NCAA tournament upsets, first at ESPN with Giant Killers and then at The Athletic and here with Bracket Breakers for, God, it's going to be our 19th tournament now. So we're going
to
get
what
into...
What is 20th anniversary? It's not silver. I have to get you something next year? I think so.
To get me something every year.
A George Mason t-shirt, maybe.
But we're gonna get into... We've got some exciting stuff planned next week. Monday, the 18th, we will be doing an hour-long Bractacular episode.
Bractacular. I love it.
It will air on DraftKings Network Monday afternoon. You can get it on YouTube whenever you like. And of course, as a podcast, Tuesday, we will be doing our regular podcast a day early on Tuesday to help you fill out your brackets. But today we want to lean into two things. First, later we're going to take a look at the women's tournament and talk about sort of what our statistical model sees as some value picks to win the championship. But first, Peter, we have a term we coined years ago called wounded assassins. And these are, in the men's field, these are teams from big conferences that maybe got beat up a little bit in their conference season. Maybe they lost 10, 11 games, 12 games. But you don't think of teams from big conferences necessarily as being underdogs, being teams that, you know, wear the glass slipper. But we've seen time and again.
Yes.
Double-digit seeds from power conferences, Syracuse, UCLA, Oregon State, make deep runs in the tournament because they have a lot of the same giant-killing characteristics that some of the smaller conference teams do.
Yeah, look, sometimes teams take a little time to gel, or they go through suspensions, or more commonly, injuries, or they just lose some close games. You get to double-digit losses, and all of a sudden, despite the world allegedly being flooded with analytics, all of a sudden, you're not really in line for a top half seed. You're going to get a lower seed. And those teams sometimes are very capable of being very dangerous in the tournament. And you're right. It's getting more common actually, because power conferences are kind of hoovering up more of the at-large bids. So
right. You're
seeing the seventh or eighth best teams in the SEC get in as opposed to the second best team in the Atlantic 10. And that means some of these double digit teams are there to make their runs.
So Peter, I want you to stay on task here. What we're going to do is we're going to go conference by conference. We're going to talk about one wounded assassin we like and one other storyline that's interesting as the conference tournaments get going this week. Okay, so let's start with the ACC. And our wounded assassin there is the Pittsburgh Panthers. They are a team that has we give an underdog rating. There's this 32.7, which is high. Why? Because they do a lot of the things we'd like to see out of smaller teams. They play slow. They're a top 10 team in defensive rebounding and avoiding turnovers, and they take a lot of three-pointers. In other words, they do a lot of the things necessary to beat a better team.
Last year, all they did was shoot threes, and that was good enough to beat poor Mississippi State by 1 point and then win another game. I mean, they had a great tournament last year, and they're a better team this year. So, yes, Pitt. Now, are they going to make the tournament? They should. They're dangerous, though, but there's an interesting game coming up. Don't they have an interesting game? They're going to have to face Wake Forest from the ACC in the ACC tournament. Wake Forest is another team that I think is deserving of getting in, but these two teams that we're interested in are going to collide with each other, right?
Yes, that matchup isn't set yet, but we assume it will manifest. And yes, so that's the interesting thing, right? Pitt, so just to finish up on Pitt, they had a big win at Cameron earlier this year. Obviously, Duke was down two starters, but that does show that they can upset a
better team. Yes, they beat Duke, so they should be in the tournament. Yes, yes.
I actually think Wake Forest, though, is the more deserving team, and it's going to be a really interesting situation. If Pitt beats Wake, you know, Joe Lunardi seems to think Wake has to win to get in.
They both can't win, yeah.
But I don't agree. Wake is 26th in KenPom, 38th in the net rankings. I've watched them a lot. That is a tournament team. And sometimes I just don't know what we're doing with some of the ways we assess these teams. I'll be disappointed if Wake doesn't get in.
All right. Well, you know, I'm okay with either one, you know, with them just basically having a play-in game in the tournament, but they're both worthy for sure.
Right.
And Pitt would be dangerous.
All right, let's move on to the Big East. First, before we get into our storyline, our two wounded assassins are Villanova, who Joe Lunardi currently has listed among the first four out, and St. John's, who he has in the first four in the bracket. Again, two teams with a lot of underdog characteristics we like, right, Peter?
Listen, if you watch for the whole season, St. John's should clearly be in. St. John's, after adjusting for strength of opponents, has outscored its opponents by over 21 points per 100 possessions. That is in the top 25 in the country. Also, Joel Soriano, a complete beast on the boards, sixth in the country in offensive rebounding. They build up possessions. Forget the ups and downs of the headlines and the narratives. This is a tournament team, and the fact that it's not recognized as such is kind of annoying.
So it's interesting. St. John's, classic giant killer in like you said, sixth in the country in offensive rebounding. They also force turnovers at an above-average rate. So we talk a lot, and we're going to talk a lot next week about teams that build extra possessions through those methods are the teams that pull off upsets. So that's why our model is sort of getting excited about St. John's. Villanova is more like Pittsburgh. They're less risk-taking in certain ways, but they own the defensive glass. They don't turn the ball over, and they shoot a lot of threes as well. The interesting thing, I think, in the Big East tournament is that these two teams may be on the outside looking in, whereas people are already assuming Seton Hall is in the tournament. But Seton Hall's metrics, they're 56th in KenPom, they're 62nd in the net.
Right. Interesting is one word for this. Yeah. This is infuriating is another word, Jordan. Go ahead. We talked about St. John's being a top 25 team. Seton Hall's barely a top 60 team.
Now, Seton Hall fans will say, we swept St. John's in the regular season, and we beat UConn, and we beat Marquette. So the question is, are those things enough to overwrite an overall more impressive body of work?
Over a 30-game season or a 6-game season? You mentioned a handful of games. We have a 30-game season, do we not? Look, here it is actually going to be head-to-head and interesting. The matchup is set. St. John's and Seton Hall will meet in a Big East quarterfinal, I believe, on Thursday afternoon, right? So let's see what happens. But I think Pitino's speechifying got all these headlines instead of St. John's play, which has been up or down, but it's always up and down in the Big East because the Big East is a competitive conference. So teams are going to go through stretches of conference play where they play about 500 or worse. Well, that happens. That happens. Right. So what? Teams have tough opponents in the Big East. Come on.
Yep.
All right, give me both those teams instead of Seton Hall.
Let's move on to the Big 12. We identified two wounded assassins there in our latest athletic piece as well. TCU right now among the last four byes, according to Bracketology. Texas Tech is a 7 seed. So what we're saying there is that's not a team that might pull off a first round upset. That's the type of team that you worry about in round two, like in a 7-2 game. Peter, you have anything to add on those teams before we get into our additional storyline? Yeah.
Very quickly on TCU, because they are one of the most dangerous underdog, like you said, wounded assassins in the field. They've gone through four losses by 2 points or less for overtime. They're sneaky good for a number of reasons. They're shooting way better than they shot last year. They've already beaten Houston. The average possession length on defense, which is something to watch, can you make opponents play very slow, is 323rd in the nation. That's a stat nobody really follows, but is really key to pulling off big upsets. They are going to be a very, very dangerous killer. So ever since they got Jameer Nelson this year from Delaware, they've been a team that puts huge pressure on their opponents. And I love TCU as a dangerous underdog.
Right. And just to put a fine point on the thing you mentioned about possession length on defense, it's really it's not as much about forcing the other team to play slowly as it is better defenses don't give up shots early in the clock. We know from back in 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns era that the best shot is often the earliest one you can get. So it's almost like the possession length is a proxy just for good defense, that they are forcing teams to work. They're not getting early offense.
Not getting easier early shots.
They're often having to take a shot at the end of the shot clock because nothing else presented itself. But the biggest storyline in the Big 12 right now, and again, I want to differentiate between when we're talking about a team being a potential upset option, we're not saying they're more or less deserving than other teams. We're just saying that they're likely to do more damage when they get in. But,
well, I'm saying they'll be more fun.
Yes. So the storyline I'm watching real quick is how far can Kansas fall? Two more key injuries. Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough are out for the Big 12 tournament, although it looks like they'll return for the NCAAs, but they are struggling. Bracketology already has them as a 4 seed. You know, if this team loses in its first game in the Big 12 tournament, maybe they're like a 5 or a 6.
Well, this may be a sign of things. The injuries are unfortunate, but everything else may be just catching up with them a little, because Kansas is not dominant in the kind of possession building categories we talk about. They're not dominant on the offensive or defensive boards. They don't force or create a lot of turnovers, but they're not great at protecting the ball either. They're going to go as far as their shooting takes them. And if the injuries wreck their shooting, they're in trouble. There's red flags with Kansas, I think. I'll say one other thing about the Big 12, which is, Jordan, do you like Houston as a potential national champion? I think we have to recognize that this team in its first year in the Big 12 has been awesome. They work hard. They do everything well. Pick a stat. They'll come out at the top of the list. I'm going to go on record now saying Houston's my national champion pick, even before Selection Sunday, before the brackets. Who can they not beat?
All right. Well, we've got, now you've left us with 3 minutes to get through three conferences, so we're going to go fast. Thanks for the Houston side. All right. Let's move on to the Big Ten. Real quick, wounded assassin is Northwestern. Peter, you've written about them. Tell us briefly why they're a team right now projected as an 8 seed that could be dangerous against a 1 seed in the second round.
They play extremely deliberately. They're extraordinarily smart. Boo Booey, my favorite player in the country, runs this offense like clockwork, like a very slow clock. And they're shooting great from the perimeter. This year, they got Ryan Langborg from Princeton. The whole team's shooting tremendously from three-point range. They are going to be dangerous.
And the other storyline to watch has to be Nebraska.
Go Nebraska. Go Huskers.
They've never won an NCAA tournament team. They look like they're going to get in this year. So look, we're going to become Nebraska fans here. If you're listening to this from the state of Nebraska and would like to invite us somewhere to watch with you or to become part of your community, we are pulling for first-time tournament winners. So
we will shuck corn.
Yep. Yes. After we finally go to the Iowa State Fair, we will go to Nebraska next. All right. SEC. Wounded assassins, Texas A&M, first team out, according to Lenardi, Mississippi State, last four byes. Texas A&M, it's really simple. They are the best offensive rebounding team in the country. A typical possession is they miss a shot, they get their own rebound. They miss a shot, they get their own rebound.
Clang,
they
clang, miss clang, again. Clang, clang, yes.
Yeah, they miss again, and the other team, they either score or the other team gets the, it's hilarious to watch, but it's also the exact type of team that we've seen pull off big upsets in the tournament in the past, so they're a team to watch. Peter, you're a Mississippi State fan as well, right?
Mississippi State does not shoot well, but does everything else well. They get a lot of offensive rebounds. We've been pulling for them ever since Pitt clipped them by 1 point in the tournament last year. They're a fun team. They've lost a lot of close games recently. They're going to be underrated. They're dangerous. But you're right. Texas A&M is the one to watch. Texas A&M, 5 quad 1 wins, then looked so bad. They've almost played their way out of the tournament. They still may have. We'll see. But they'd be a real giant killing threat.
All right, and Peter, real quick, give us something fun on the Mountain West Conference, which looks like it'll get at least 5 teams in the field.
Look, I just want to put a quick plug in for New Mexico. Boise State's supposed to be an 8 seed, Nevada a 5 seed, Colorado State a 9 seed. New Mexico is 3-3 against those teams. And looking just at how well you've done against opponents on a strength adjusted basis, New Mexico's scoring margin is greater than any of those teams. They deserve a shot at least as much as the bottom three teams that are all projected to get in. Go New Mexico. They'd be a threat, fun wounded assassin as well. They're underrated. They're a value play.
So those are some fun things to watch in the conference tournaments this week, in the power conferences. Notice we said power conferences. So sorry, Pac-12. We ran out of time for you, and looks like you've run out of time for yourself.
They run out of teams. They run out of sports. They run out of venues. They've run out. They've run out. They run out the clock on their existence. It's sad to say.
Right. But look, pay attention to these qualities we're bringing up. Check out our articles on The Athletic about what makes a good underdog, and we will add a lot more depth once we have a bracket early next week. But for now, we're going to shift things over to the women's side right after this.
Underdog. Underdog.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.
Underdog, underdog.
We're back and we are juiced for the women's tournament as well. Peter, there's been a lack of analytics in women's basketball for a while. And we've started, look, our model isn't as refined as on the men's side yet, just because there's not as much data available. But we're able to come up with basic power rankings of women's basketball teams in a way that isn't out there much. And it's already showing us a lot of value, right?
Yes. I think there's a big picture here, which is that in a lot of women's sports, the analytics are lagging men's sports by years, if not decades. And Jordan, what happens when you don't have good, reliable numbers to base judgments on? Here's what happens. The same old stuff that we used to see in the men's rankings and the men's tournament and the men's polls in football and basketball happens to the women. If your team is famous, you're overrated. Unless you get too famous and you don't meet everybody's expectations, in which case you may be so famous that you become underrated, right? We all know how that works. If you win close games, all of a sudden you're clutchy instead of lucky. And then finally, there's massive recency bias, okay? Mm-hmm. Now look, if you have an easy tournament, right? If you have an easy conference, I mean to say, then you may suffer a lot of losses early in the season and look better late. If you don't, it will be the reverse. And people who don't have anything objective to rely on will call that momentum or negative momentum. Right. But in reality, it's the terrain that you're playing on. So what we can do at least is say, here's how teams look on offense and defense after you adjust for the strength of their opponents. And how does that look like compared with everything that these kind of over and underrated tendencies have in common, which you see crop up in public opinion, you see crop up in polls, and you actually see pop up in betting lines. So while we don't have as much information as we'd like, there's actually more to exploit, because in the absence of information, people make all of these, you know, all of these value judgments.
So what I want to do real quick is read the odds of the favorites to win a national championship in the women's game.
Now, do you want me to applaud or boo at the time? Or you want me to reserve
no,
my
let's,
facial gestures?
And then we're going to point out, okay, we're going to point out a couple teams after that are out of line with what we see in our basic power rankings that you're through just a statistical lens. As Peter
so I will
about.
Not heckle you as you run right. through a few of these. I'll keep it quiet. Go ahead.
So first, South Carolina is minus 120 to win the title. In other words, you wouldn't, you're not even getting even odds. It's the classic South Carolina or the field bet. Okay. So that's how heavy a favorite they are. Second is Iowa at plus 600, LSU plus 700, UConn plus 1500, Stanford plus 1600, Texas plus 2000, Ohio State plus 2500, UCLA plus 3500, NC State plus 4000, USC plus 5000, Notre Dame plus 5000, and then you're getting into Virginia Tech and Utah at plus 7500. Now, Peter, so hearing those gambling odds, I can see the dollar signs lighting up in your eyeballs, because I think you found value in a couple picks, right?
So Jordan, did I say if you're famous, you're overrated? Let's run those through those top three. South Carolina is worse than even money to win. Iowa's number two, and LSU is number three. And in our basic power rankings, South Carolina is number one by a huge margin. We'll get
by
to that
a
in
wide,
a second.
Wide margin, yeah.
By a margin of like 10 points per 100 possessions, which is incredible. But I have to say, Iowa is fifth and LSU is sixth. So those odds are not giving you good value. So first of all, let's take South Carolina versus the field. South Carolina is 10 points better than any other team. That's an incredible statistic. We should pause to appreciate it. But that does not mean they're a better choice in the field to win, because there is more parity in the women's game now. There are more good teams. That means especially there's been an increasing concentration of good players, very good players on very good teams. ESPN just ran a simulation. Was it 1,000, 10,000 times, I think, they ran the tournament. South Carolina won 39.1% of the time. Again, that's a staggering number. Like, you wouldn't find the Celtics or, you know, even the Dynasty Patriots winning 40% of the time. But you should not pick.
But you still take the field.
You still take the field given those odds. So that's the first thing to point out. The second thing is there are two teams I think that really stick out in terms of the value. Let's just go through it. You said UConn is plus 1,500, right? Mm-hmm. We've got UConn. Our model rates it as the second best team in the country. The Huskies have.
Which is interesting because right now they're projected as a three seed, first of all.
Right. So why is that? I mean, it's because there's one national sports writer who actually wrote, UConn hasn't been in the spotlight as much recently. That's why, because UConn is being compared to their dynastic past, not so much to their actual performance this season is what I think.
Well, hold on. They did have some tough non-conference losses, and then they rolled through a very weak Big East that hasn't tested them. So there are reasons to say, you know, they lost to UCLA, right? Well, so UCLA deserves a better seed. It's not entirely, well, oh, UConn's just not what they used to be. But no, our but model when you, still
when,
loves them.
When you get down to it, it's not just fancy stats or computer talk. It's that they have outscored their opponents after adjusting for the strength of their schedule, which overall is pretty tough. Not a cakewalk just because they played some really easy Big East opponents in their conference tournament. And they did. I mean, the final, didn't they beat Georgetown 78-42? They destroyed them. But maybe that means they were easy. Maybe it means UConn's really great. But anyway, if you adjust for that as best we can, they have the number two margin in the country, over 50 points per 100 possessions, better than an average. South Carolina is up at 60. So now look, UConn has not been in close games, okay? They're 0-5 against the very top teams, and they have not even had, Jordan, this is a cool stat. You know how many games, I mean, how many possessions, I'll make it even easier, how many possessions UConn has had where they were within 5 points, either ahead or behind, with 5 minutes left in the game this whole season?
No idea.
Zero. So the point is, can they beat the best teams when they have to in the tournament? If you think there's any chance of that, they're a great value bet. So, I mean, there's that. And I think we also think UCLA is a pretty good value bet, don't we?
So that's the interesting one to me, yeah. I mean, because you're getting, what, plus 3,500 odds for a team that's coming out of a really tough conference and right now is projected as a two seed. And by the way, early in the season, beat your UConn Huskies by 11 points.
That's right. So why are they down a little bit? Because they lost by 2 points to Oregon State, and because they lost in double overtime in the Pac-12 semifinal to USC, and they just didn't get a shot off at the end of regulation or the end of the first overtime. So it looked ugly, but it was their close losses. This is what I'm saying. Recency bias and close games do not trump a season's worth of outscoring your opponents. If you think UCLA has even a 3% or 4 or 5% chance, which I think is reasonable, to win the national championship, plus 3,500 is good odds.
I think all those Pac-12 teams are really interesting for a variety of reasons. I think Stanford also is a little bit underrated, even though they're projected to be a one seed. You can get them at plus 1,600 right now. Peter, is the, Utah is a real long shot from that conference at plus 7,500. Our model even likes them, right?
They're a top 10 team. They're just not famous. They don't have the superstar power. They're not as famous as LSU or some of the other teams or Notre Dame. They were great last year too. They were over 40 points better than average, which is pretty impressive.
Right. And those teams, it's worth mentioning Stanford, Utah, USC, UCLA, Colorado earlier in the season, especially those teams have beat up on each other. And, you know, so we may not be that. That's the counter argument to UConn, right? Is that of course these teams are losing games. They're playing each other.
Right. Although UConn won't have to face a really tough one of those teams until the Final Four, the way things are going. They'll face Stanford in the Final Four if the way things play out now looks.
I mean, right now, right? Like, you know, in the most recent bracketology, you know, you could be looking at a good team in the Sweet 16, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm just trying to make you question yourself about UConn. But Paige Beckers is averaging 27 points a game over her last six games and seems to be rounding into form after last year's
ACL.
Keep an eye
on Lauren Betts at UCLA, our other value team, too. A center who's shooting 65%. UCLA is number one in the country in total rebounding percentage, number two in offensive rebounding percentage. Both UConn, because of their guards, and UCLA, because of their inside play, do what safe giants should do. They do not throw the ball away, and they choke off opponent's shooting percentage. So
there you have it.
I like them for statistical reasons, too.
There you have it. Root for your wounded assassins on the men's side. Take the field on the women's side. But we're going to dig much deeper into all this early next week when the brackets are out and the tournament is about to begin. We can't wait. Until then, I'm Jordan. That's Peter. Enjoy March.